to what we need on the ground right now. About 40 to 45% of our troops are National Guard and Army Reserve. The head of the Army Reserve said that we are rapidly degenerating, quote, into a broken force. He's worried about retention, recruitment. The National Guard has reached only half its goal in January in terms of retention and recruitment. The Marine Corps, for the first time in a decade, has not reached its recruiting goal. Mm-hmm. Will it be necessary to say to the National Guard, you may have to serve another 24 months, not just the original 24 months that we sent you, but we may break you and have to send you back again?
We have no plans to do to change the rulings and the methods that we're operating on at the present time. For the first time, we've begun to see some goals and targets not being fulfilled. But generally, recruiting and retention has been on track and is today generally on track. One of the reasons that the National Guard and the reserves are slightly down is because we're enlarging the size of the Army. And in that process, more people are staying in. And one of the pools that you draw on to build the Guard and Reserve is people coming off active duty, as you know. So there's fewer people coming off active duty. Therefore, we've increased the number of recruiters, we've increased the incentives, and we just simply have to recognize that the stress on the force is real and take the kinds of steps that we've taken to anticipate that and see that we're able to attract and retain the people we need. We have still only used about 40% of the Guard and Reserve that's available in this country since the beginning of the Afghan operation.
So you have no plans to change the rules in terms of extending the
term? No, the rules, there's been a debate in the press about
yes.
whether you wanted to change 24 months to cumulative or consecutive, and it's being left at consecutive, not cumulative.
Let me show you some comments that some have made
or
about...
cumulative, I misspoke, yeah.
I understand. Some things that the members of Congress have said. This is Susan Collins, a Republican, not a Democrat, Republican. I think there are increasing concerns about the Secretary's leadership of the war, the repeated failures to predict the strengths of the insurgency, the lack of essential safety equipment for our troops, the reluctance to expand the number of troops. I want to talk, we've talked about insurgency. I want to bring you back to the whole debate about the use of essential safety equipment for our troops and take you back to December. We haven't seen you since then. When Thomas Wilson stood up and asked you a question. I want to show you that exchange and come back and talk about it.
Oh. Now, why do we soldiers have to dig through local landfills for pieces of scrap metal and compromised ballistic glass to up-armor our vehicles, and why don't we have those resources readily available to us?
As you know, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you might want or wish to have at a later time. And if you think about it, you can have all the armor in the world on a tank, and a tank can be blown up. And you can have an up-armored Humvee, and it can be blown up.
Now, Specialist Wilson did acknowledge he worked with a journalist in crafting that question.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Let me get into this a little bit.
Sure.
That was unfair, and it was selectively taking out two sentences from a long exchange, there it is, that took place. And when you suggested that that's how I answered that question, that is factually wrong.
No,
that is not how I answered that question.
Mr. Secretary, it clearly represents the exchange.
It does not.
All right, what
you
is missing?
You want to hear the exchange? There it is. It's right here. I'll read it to you. If you're going to quote pieces of it, I'll give you the exchange. He asked that question, and I said, I talked to the general coming out here about the pace at which the vehicles are being armored. They have been brought from all over the world, wherever they're not needed, to places where they are needed. I'm told they are being, the Army is, I think it's something like 400 a month are being done now. And it's essentially a matter of physics. It's not a matter of money. It isn't a matter on the part of the Army's desire. It's a matter of production and capability of doing it. As you know, you do not go to war with the Army. You go to war with the Army you have. They're not the Army you might want or wish to have at a later time. Since the Iraq conflict began, the Army has been pressing ahead to produce armor necessary at a rate that they believe, it's a greatly expanded rate from what existed previously, but a rate that they believe is the rate that can be accomplished. I can assure you that General Schoomaker and the leadership of the Army, and certainly General Whitcomb, are sensitive to the fact that not every vehicle has the degree of armor that would be desirable to have, but that they're working at it at a good clip. It's interesting. I've talked a great deal about this with a team of people who've been working at it hard at the Pentagon. And if you think about it, you can have all the armor in the world on a tank, and the tank can still be blown up. And you can have an up-armored Humvee, and it can be blown up. And you can go down, and the vehicle, the goal we have is to have many of those vehicles as humanly possible with the appropriate level of armor available for the troops. And that's what the Army's been working on. And General Whitcomb, is there anything you want to add? And then he spoke. Now, that answer is totally different from picking out two lines. And I think it's an unfair representative, and it's exactly what some of the newspapers around the country did. Now, let's go back to Susan Collins' comment, Senator Collins.
Well, let me just finish on the Humvees. Because,
you bet.
Because
okay, I'll tell you right now where we are. By February 15th, 9 days from now, there will not be a vehicle moving around in Iraq outside of a protected compound with American soldiers in it that does not have an appropriate level of armor.
Which is a pretty dramatic change, because Newsweek had said that of the 19,000 Humvees in the Iraqi theater, according to the Army's latest numbers, only a quarter were fully armored. So the fact is that Specialist Wilson's question in front of his troops, in which he was cheered, was helpful in getting people to truly focus and respond to this. Fair?
I didn't criticize his question. I thanked him for his question.
No, but is that a fair statement?
Well, you saw my answer. We'd already been focusing on it hard. I answered it by saying we had teams of people in Washington working on it. General Whitcomb was working on it. Let's go back to Senator Collins. You said that she was critical because we couldn't predict the size of the insurgency. That is the job for the intelligence community. And it is unfortunate that we don't have perfect visibility into that. It is also unfortunate that it's changing and evolving, and therefore easy to say, well, you don't know what the size is because the size is changing. But the fact of the matter is, it's a difficult thing to do. I suppose someone can sit back in an air-conditioned room and be critical of it, but the fact is the intelligence community is working as hard as they know how to try to manage those serious questions about what the size is. Second, to say that I've resisted increasing the size of the Army is factually incorrect. We've increased the size of the Army. We've been doing it under the emergency authority. The Congress, some of the people in the Congress have wanted to increase the end strength by statute. And we don't need that done because under the emergency authority, we can increase it, and we have already increased it by tens of thousands.
There was a large debate at the Pentagon. General Shinseki, we've talked about this before, others saying we needed 200,000 troops on the ground.
That's a separate issue from the size of the Army. Quite different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there was also comments made that you were going to transform the Army and have a light, more mobile force and not have as many additional members of the armed forces as some were suggesting.
Not true.
At all.
No. The size of the Army is quite a different thing from whether it's light and agile and mobile and able to go someplace fast. That's the nature of the Army, not the size of the Army.
In hindsight, do you wish we had sent more troops on the ground in Iraq initially?
I wish that we could have gotten the 4th Infantry Division in from the north so that it would have been able to put more pressure on the Ba'athist regime and probably capture more of the Ba'athists that today are part of the insurgency. But in terms of the total numbers of troops that went in, we finally got the 4th ID in, but it had to come in from the south. So it was not as effective as had it come in through Turkey. The answer to your other question is no. I think that General Franks and General Abizaid have been correct in calculating the number of troops that we need on the ground in Iraq.
Bob Woodward had said that General Franks had recommended 300,000 troops.
At any given moment, General Franks might have had some number in his mind. So what we did was I agreed with his recommendation, which was that we put in line up to 500,000 that could go in where they needed, and that at any moment where they were not needed, he would pull the stopper and stop it, and he did. And that's where it stopped. And I think he was right, because the balance he faced in both Afghanistan and Iraq is you do not want to become a heavy footprint occupying force that causes more of an irritant than the population than a benefit. And who knows what's perfect? It's not for me to judge. But when General Myers, General Pace, General Franks, General Abizaid, General Sanchez, and now General Casey tell me that they believe we have the right number on the ground, that's good enough for me.
You said to CNN on Thursday that you tendered your resignation twice to the President of the United States.
I was asked.
Why?
Why? First of all, an unfortunate thing happened on my watch, and I was secretary. And
Abu Ghraib.
Abu Ghraib. And people were not treated the way they should have been treated, and that's wrong. And it seemed to me that a president ought to have that choice. I had to make a decision if I thought I should leave. And I decided that I would leave if I thought I could not be effective. And I decided I thought I could be effective. But I also know that the president deserved a chance to make that decision himself. So I sat down with him and handed him a written resignation and urged him to think very carefully about it from his standpoint, from the country's standpoint. And that's why.
Why twice?
I did it first in the Oval Office, and about 10 days later, he was at the Pentagon, and I had migrated in my thinking that from his standpoint, it might be wiser from his standpoint if he were able to step off fresh. And so I tried to persuade him that that was the case, and I failed.
Did you think you had done something wrong?
No. Obviously, the country it has to be deeply concerned that people were not treated right. And I was Secretary of Defense when that happened. And we've had 8 or 10 investigations. We've had dozens of criminal trials, and people have pled guilty to doing things they shouldn't do. And obviously, you just feel terrible about that. That is not the way our country behaves. And it was a most unfortunate thing that had happened. And I was Secretary of Defense.
When John Kerry calls for your resignation and says he has 800,000 signatures on his internet, John McCain says he has no confidence, Trent Lott says he's not a fan, what does that do to your ability to be Secretary of Defense?
Well, you know, we were in a political campaign, and there are people always running for president, and that goes with the territory. We've never had a war in this country where there haven't been critics. They were calling for George Washington's resignation. In the Civil War, they were constantly calling for resignations. In the World War I, in World War II, in Korea, there have never been a war or a war president or a war secretary of state who has not been criticized by critics, and particularly during a political campaign or by political people who are running for president. So that's life.
Would you have done anything differently?
Oh, my goodness. Sure, I don't know. Maybe there was a way to get the 4th Infantry Division,
or
that
Abu
type of
Ghraib?
Thing? Well, I mean, in retrospect, we've taken probably 15 or 20 administrative steps to require that people go in if it's the midnight shift half a world away. And we know in history, people who guard people have done things wrong with respect to the people. It happens in prisons all over the United States and other countries. So you don't want that to happen. So maybe you have to do senior officer checks at the midnight shift, because apparently a lot of it happened during a relatively brief period of months.
You're confident it cannot happen again?
Of course not. Human beings are human beings. People do things they shouldn't do. All I'm confident of is that the Army, which is the executive agent for detainees, is seized with this problem. They recognize it's their responsibility. They've worked hard to undertake a whole series of steps to try to see that it doesn't happen again, and I pray it doesn't happen again, because it's wrong.
And you will be Secretary of Defense and see this war through as long as?
We serve at the pleasure of the President.
But you have every expectation of staying for how long?
I serve at the pleasure of the President.
You don't want to see Iraq all the way through until the American troops are home?
It's not for me to tie his hands. I look at what's happening in Afghanistan, and I think of the people who are soldiers, who've died there, and the wounded, that I your heart breaks when you see limbs off, and how proud they are of what they've accomplished, of liberating 25 million people, who for the first time in 5,000 years have a popularly elected president, a constitution. They're going to have parliamentary elections later this spring or summer. It's a thrilling thing. It shows how important their sacrifice has been. And you see what's happening in Iraq and that election and people who've been decades, they've been frightened to come out of their homes, to put their heads up, to do something that the regime might not like, because they filled tens of thousands of people in mass graves. And they came out. I'm told that they wandered around in front of the election polling place, and finally some woman in her 60s or 70s said, I've waited my whole life to do this, walked in, and everyone walked in. Now, those folks who've been killed there, those folks who are wounded there, their families and their loved ones have to feel that their sacrifice was worth it, that the effect that can have on that region and the world can just be so important. It's an amazing thing that's happening in our world.
Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, as always, we thank you for your views.
Thank you.